Hello, and welcome to another episode of Endeavors. Today's show features an interview with Toronto vocalist, the baritone Corin Thomas Smith. He is part of a new production at the Citadel & Company, Against Nature, which is by the choreographer James Kudelka. You may remember I've featured Citadel & Company on my show before last year when I had an interview with dancer Laurence Lemieux, who is the founder of Citadel. Laurence is also performing in this piece as well. So it is Against Nature, and it's choreographer James Kudelka's multidisciplinary work, which is sort of a dance, opera, theater hybrid that adapts the novel Au Rebours by French-Dutch author Joris Karel Huysman. And this powerful work is replete with rich visuals, fluid choreography that supports and strengthens the story. Says Laurence Lemieux, "I have a profound appreciation for James's creative talent, and it always is a uniquely fascinating process to return to a work we presented years earlier, discovering new colors, dynamics, and energies that only reveal themselves through time and renewed explanation." Against Nature revolves around Jean Desessient, played by Alexander Dobson, an aristocrat who exiles himself to the countryside and surrounds himself amongst his literature, art, and the memories of his once sensuous lifestyle. Desessient becomes increasingly reclusive as his disenchantment with 18th-century bourgeoisie class grows day by day. Curious household staff, performed by artistic director Laurence Lemieux and baritone Corin Thomas Smith, witness and then ultimately participate in his tragic downfall. The music is by award-winning composer James Rolfe and award-winning librettist Alex Goldin, together with Simon Rossiter's lighting designs and projections by Mayor Jeremy Migma, as well as live performances by pianist Stephen Phil Cox, violinist Pamela Artiwala, and cellist Karina Reeves. As I mentioned, my guest Corin Thomas Smith is a performer. He comes from an operatic background as a baritone, and he says it was really interesting for him getting to move as well and performing something different than the traditional opera. The show goes up at the Citadel from May 22nd to 25th, and again on May 29th through June 1st at the Citadel Ross Center for Dance. This is my interview with baritone Corin Thomas Smith. I'm here with Corin Thomas Smith. Hello, good morning.
Hello.
It's bright and early. How do you feel?
Too bright, too early. I feel good. I feel okay. I feel bamboozled. swindled, really, because when I woke up this morning, it was freezing cold. And then I hopped my Uber to the GO station. I got off the train, sunny skies.
Right, yeah.
Clear, hot. I had a scarf and two jackets. So I feel robbed.
Now, I mean, you have to come in all the way from Pickering.
Yeah.
Every day. What? I mean, no, that's not really that much of a commute.
It's not the worst.
It's like, what, 45 minutes?
Like, if I take the GO train,
yeah.
Sometimes if I want to really suffer, I'll take the TTC, and then that's an hour and a half to 2 hours.
Right.
During rush hour, especially.
Right.
Which this is taking place right after rush hour. But luckily, it was okay. Yeah. I pay the extra money to get here. That's okay.
You know, as an artist, your Pickering's kind of, it's like, it's a small town, but it's right next to a major city. Like, it's almost part of the extended GTA, if you will. What was your exposure like to the arts growing up there?
To the arts? Well, I actually grew up in Toronto. I grew up in Scarborough. But I didn't really come from a art family. I didn't really come from, like, I think my dad sung at some point, but definitely not in the field or the realm that I did, and not professionally. So I didn't really have much exposure to the arts until I really took like band courses in grade 8 or something, which was like super lame and I was not good. But I played like flute for like 7 years. And then I would go to like the TSO with like my high school classes, and we had to do kind of like studies in ISUs on with like on operas and like classical music things, and that was the only really exposure I got to it. So I wasn't really into the artsy until I decided to really take courses in university
Right.
for it. I wanted to be a teacher, so I was like, I need a teachable. I guess I'll do something. Like, and je parle un peu de français, donc
Right.
I'll guess I'll take French and music, and then I'll become a teacher, a high school teacher, and then die. So and then after I started like really getting into it, I was like, oh, okay. And then that's when my interest in the arts kind of peaked. After that.
You know, I like we all do arts things in high school. Like I was a choir
Oh
boy. You know, I did musical theater. I did, you know, certain things, but so few of us, I think, actually pursue it professionally or pursue it correctly because we're always told there's no money,
yes.
right?
I mean, it's not
True,
a
true. But you know, I mean, I'm still in it. Like I know people who studied it, gave themselves 5 years, and then went back to school for like engineering or something, right? But what was there a kicker for you? Like you mentioned that you sort of took initially to become a teacher, but was there a kicker for you that said, no, this is where I belong?
When I realized I was really good. No, but when I started like something about it just really clicked with me. And I really just, I don't know, I started getting more opportunity. I started finding more kind of like ability to express myself through it, more than I used to think that I had in it. And it kind of just like a lot of like thing kind of snowballed, and I guess fate to a certain degree, where I just kind of found myself in these positions where I'm just like, oh, okay, I'm finding enjoyment out of it. And I'm finding partial success out of it, so I guess I can continue and ride this roller coaster as far as I can, take the bull as long as it'll allow me to, you know. That was kind of what the kicker was like, as in there was there a certain event
Well,
in time or.
yeah, just you know, was there? I mean, you mentioned you were good, but
Okay, I mean that was a
well, yeah, right.
privilege.
No, I know, but like, but there are people that are good that also don't pursue it for a living because you know it's not a passion, or they know they can't make a living from it, and yet there are people who are less good or really enthusiastic about it that do want to. Make you know try to make a living out of it. Was there like yeah? Was there a specific event or a specific time that you were like no, this is what I'm going to do.
I think that was something that was kind of like determined when I first saw like shows at the Canadian Opera Company. And my first show was like a Wagner opera, which was like not the best introductory opera, I must say. Die Walküre is not the best thing
Oh,
to say.
Wagner.
Oh, good old Boggy. But like every time I see a show, I feel kind of like reinvigorated into the art in general. And when I do the shows myself, I really do feel as if I have a connection to it. You probably heard this a million times where people say, like, if you can imagine going to something else, do
Do it,
it,
yeah.
that kind of thing. Well, I realized that I was too dumb to go into anything else. So I was like, you know what? I guess I gotta make this work. Yeah, no, there wasn't a really particular moment in time that kind of was a catalyst to my view of my own career, what little there it is right now. But I do feel as if like I was kind of just I was led into it by just happenstance that accumulated.
And do you feel that it was always a foregone conclusion that you were going to do more like opera and be more of the classically trained singer rather than, let's say, do, you know, rock or popular or more contemporary music that a lot of, you know, that we see a lot of other people go into?
Well, I was a choir boy as well when I was in high school. And when I was in elementary school, I was a boy soprano for a very long time. But I sang a lot of pop music and stuff, but for some reason, I never had that pop sound. Like, I never sounded like a pop singer ever. And then eventually, I started singing classically in university. And I realized, like, oh, this is where my voice kind of fits and sits. And, like, I don't know, I'm not sure if you find this, but, like, I feel like in performing music, there's like such an attitude that you have to have about the performance you're doing, and such a confident need to do well with any art. And like I just realized I was not of the aptitude that I could do be a pop musician at all. I wasn't creatively inclined. I knew I was never a singer-songwriter. I'm much more into interpretation in that sense. And within that kind of musical performance realm, that's only really something you can do within the operatic genre as a singer. So I felt that was the kind of avenue I had to take. And I think it suits my personality well. I feel like people are very much reflections of what they do. And I feel as if my personality lends itself to be more classically inclined, despite the fact that I'm not like what a typical like classical musician or classical musician like appreciator would be, want to be inclined to think they are. But I definitely think that that's more of my avenue. I never really had any sort of inclination to do anything else.
Speaking of interpretation, you're part of the new show here.
Against Nature.
Against Nature. And this is interesting because it's based off of an 1884 novel, mm-hmm. Which I was unfamiliar with coming in. Were you familiar with it? Have you read it since starting rehearsals for the show? Is that something that you partake in terms of for research?
I mean, a good artist would. I'm not a good artist. No, I read definitely through the libretto. The libretto was written by Alex Poshkovan or something. I forgot. The name escapes me right now. And I definitely read through the whole thing before I started. And I've read like bits and pieces of it. But the story is very clear when you actually, when you perform it much more than I feel like. Like the interpretation that James Kudelka, the director of the show, takes is a very obvious one. I never felt as if I was at a loss of not knowing the source material before I started the endeavor. And also, the rehearsal process kept me so busy that I don't think I would have time to open the book. I'm too busy stretching and doing roles and reviewing choreography. Okay. But yeah, definitely, the story is very intense from what I gather from it. And it's very, very interesting one.
Now you're obviously your background is a singer, and this show is interesting because here we are at the Citadel, which is predominantly a dance company, and your show Against Nature is a dance. It's been described as a dance opera hybrid. Mm-hmm. Just in terms of an artist and as a performer, how different is that for you than doing like a straight opera or like a straight choral performance, for example?
Mm-hmm. It's almost entirely different. Just the way that people work in a dance setting is so different than what I have experienced ever being on stage. I'm currently doing my master's in music in opera as well. So this is like, I just finished my first year. So this is a direct dichotomy as to what I experienced on stage. And the way that that this show progresses is so intricate. And every kind of cog needs to have a very particular way of being. Whereas I feel like in opera, in traditional opera performance, you as a singer, you come with, the way it kind of works is that you prepare your role ahead of time.
Sure.
You come to the rehearsals. Your arias especially are something that you've worked on, you've done for a very long time, and you've coached in a very particular way. A music director will maybe like add their little hits there. It depends on their preference of things. A director will stage you and put you on a place, but a lot of time your interpretation of a work is your own. Whereas here, it's very much a cohesive whole. Like, we all have to be a part of the same understanding in order to form a very intricate work. Like, everyone is doing something that will impact someone else, which is interesting. And, like, the sharing of just, like, I don't know, it'd be so, I'm creative, I experience this shift of energy. But, like, the energy that we have, like, working together is different than that of an opera. And the work itself is so much more fast paced. Whether it's particular to this work or not is a question in and of itself. But it's a different atmosphere, because with an opera you have things like overtures and things where you have breaks and segment like scheduled dance breaks and things where you can rest. But this show is so exposed. Where it's like it's just your body and your voice in a small black room with a small audience, and it just feels much more exposed than an opera would. There's an opera, like I'm talking a lot, an opera like kind of allows that distance. away from the people that you create toward, you create to. Whereas I find more, a lot of indie initiatives are kind of taking away that kind of barrier, but it's definitely a different kind of perspective on art making.
Do you find, though, that as someone who is classically trained and, you know, yes, we're seeing a lot more contemporary dance these days, but in terms of being a classically trained singer and being a classically trained dancer, do you see a lot of similarities? Because they're, when you're training, they're both about technique. That's what they emphasize, right? And so do you see a lot of similarities in, I guess, how they're approached in terms of the craft?
Yeah. I guess there's it's a lot of the same, because as a singer, you're building your technique just so you can do, and as a dancer, you're building your technique so you can do. It's interesting to see the differences in that approach, whereas I need, I can sing anything just like that, kind of like, okay. I'm literally a disclaimer, I sound like, I kind of sound dickish, but I mean, like, I can sing things. I've worked a long part of my life to be able to sing and perform on a consistent basis. Just want to make sure that's clear. But like Laurence, who is my dancer counterpart in this show, much less of a counterpart, actually, she's an amazing dancer. And she, her ability to, James Kudalka, our director, would say like, can you do like a grand de jambe and blah blah and a kick split and blah blah? She'd be like, oh, okay. And was go into it, whereas I need like a good 15 minutes of like focused cognitive thought to make a single body movement. So that's I think the technical basis is all kind of the same. When you, at the end of the day, the difference is that whereas like mine, I feel like mine requires so much kind of like thought energy, but the kinetic kind of like inspiration behind dance is so kind of like, I don't want to say impulsive, but like, so like kind of like naturally like right. Physical, and that's a different energy that I had to kind of acclimatize myself towards.
How closely do you work with like the choreographer in this, rather than just like, okay, I'm going to go work with a vocal director. Mm-hmm. How closely do you work with somebody like James every rehearsal, even though you're just a singer, like, that way you can sort of match your voice to Laurence's movements and vice versa.
Well, the thing is, I'm also dancing in this show as well, right? So I need to work with James way more than Laurence ever would. But the team here, especially like Stephen Philcox, the music director, we had the chance to really rehearse and work over music before we started the rehearsal process, so I came very prepared for that. He really helped me with that regard. But James Kudalka has been at every rehearsal thus far. This is a remount of a previous production that they'd done. They did it in 2016 with a different baritone in my stead. So I'm kind of slotting myself into something that's already been kind of created. So I'm just putting myself into those spots. So James is really working with me so I can get to that same effect. And work on the little technical things that I, and the kind of like the body positioning and the things that I would have to have for that work. So it's been a very intimate process between the team, and James has been very involved.
Are you enjoying the dancing aspect of it? Is that something that you have a lot of experience with?
I call myself a mover, because in opera, you don't really have to dance that much if you're singing, really, but... I can move much more than the typical opera singer would, I guess. I'm actually kind of a bold claim to make. But, to dance, I've been enjoying myself. When I first auditioned for it, we had a little bit of dance stuff, and we had to do the choreography. And it was very fun and intriguing. Then I got hired for the gig. And that brought about to change, because I'm just like, oh, and I watched the production that the recording did years ago, and I say to myself, oh, gosh darn, what did I get myself into? Because I had to do it. It's very, very intimidating to see. But the team is so nice and like and kind and patient here. And now I find it a lot more fun than I did before. It's definitely an enjoyable experience. I assume it'd be more enjoyable to watch than it is for me to do. It's physically tiring. I've never been as tired or as sweaty in my life as I have in preparation for this performance. But no, definitely it's... Also, it's very fulfilling to put yourself in a different, yeah. a different avenue of creation.
You mentioned that you had to audition for this. What was that process like for you?
Oh, boy. So this was a time when I wasn't living all the way in Pickering. So it was a cute little... I lived in Kensington. A cute little mosey down. And again, I was running late, so an Uber. Got here, it's like a January morning. It was snowy and everything. But the audition itself, we came in... It all started with the with movement. So we do stretches together, we warm up together, and then Laurence would teach us choreography to do. And after that choreography, James Kodalka would also be observing. He'd be a witness too. He'd be observing what we're doing, as well as the composer James Rolfe was also there for the music segment. We'd sing our parts. We got parts of the score to prepare ahead of time, and then we'd sing it for the kind of company. And after that, I went about my day, and I went to class. But it was, like, much different than any audition I've ever had. Like, the way classical auditions come, work, is that you walk into a room, there's a piano, and a pianist already there, and a panel of people, and they'll say, "Hey, how are you doing today?" I'd say, "I'm good. My name is Corin Thomas Smith. I'd like to start with..." And I would commence with the piece. They maybe ask for another one, but then you take your music back and you leave. And then you hear back in 2 months or whatever, however the time period is, right? But this is like, I came in like Adidas track pants. And it was like the weirdest. It was like so kind of like, it was formally informal. It's kind of like, I didn't know what to expect. I knew this is audition time, but I also knew that like to work with somebody, you're kind of like, when you go to an audition like that, they're also judging on like, how you work with other people and how you relate to other people and what your energy is. So it was a lot different than any kind of sort of other classical audition I've had.
It's interesting you mention that because like whenever you audition for film, for example, or TV, right, you go in the room and it's like, you know, you got the camera person and the casting director, but you're not actually auditioning with anyone that you're working with until maybe like a callback or whatever, right? But here it seems like you are working with the people that were directly in your audition, like with Laurence and with James.
Yeah.
Was that useful for you at all as a performer? Knowing that if you got it, you would be with the same people?
Yeah, it was nice because then you gotta get that sense of approval. It's like, they liked me enough that they want to work with me again. I don't feel as weird coming to a blind kind of rehearsal as that. And also Alex Dobson was there, who is the lead baritone in this show. And it was nice to kind of like already form these kind of connections with others before you started to like, and I got a feel of who they were. We had nice conversations. And, so definitely going into the rehearsal process, I knew that I had a supportive kind of like a team of people here and we're all trying to make good art together. So it was less daunting in that sense.
You mentioned you're a baritone, and it strikes me that, you know, as someone who comes from a musical theater background, who's also, you know, can do, like, who has a lower register voice, baritone, it's harder for her to find roles because a lot of the stuff in modern musical theater is tenor-based.
Oh, yeah.
Right? As someone who is a baritone, how easy is it for you to find those roles?
Well, thank God I'm not musical theater, because I feel like there's literally nothing.
there's basically... Mark from Rent, and that's about it.
Yeah, but if you're black, it opens another side. I did Cole House from Ragtime a couple of years back, which is a baritone role. It's like it's pretty low.
You could get away with Collins maybe from Rent.
I could.
You've actually got a good look for him too, like with the cap and everything.
Okay.
He's probably Jesse Collins is getting into tenor territory there, but it's not super super high. Yeah. You know, but but like, right, you said as a black person, it's Ragtime and Porgy and Bess, right?
Essentially, I just did a whole essay about Porgy and Bess for my first year seminar, so I feel very well equipped to talk about this. No, but especially speaking as a lower voice, like, you literally get, like, the scraps of every good show. There's all, especially in opera, it doesn't change because there's always a lead tenor and a secundo kind of baritone or basso role. So it's, like, very, it's, like, Everyone wants to hear the high C, you know. Everyone wants to hear the Nessun Dorma. Everyone else wants to hear Ames Ami. Like, you know, who wants to hear like a baritone singing? Like, not as exciting. But like, there's some good shows out there. But definitely musical theater, it's more of a realm for like a baritone who can get up there. Like, I sang Bobby from like Company back when I was in first year undergrad, and that's kind of like a baritone kind of thing. Back when I didn't know how to belt, so you can only imagine how poorly that went. It was like the most like dark sound you'd ever imagine in your entire life. But it was there's not a lot of good stuff for the baritone voice, but this music is very good for the baritone. There's two of them, so get your fix now.
Do you find that like with opera, you know, you got like the baroque and the romantic, it's maybe more suited and a little more open for baritone singers, just because that's the type of music that it is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Like, yeah, like as time progressed, let's give you kind of a mini history lesson. But back in the Baroque period, every low voice was like a bass, and every high voice was a tenor for men, anyways. And then women back at this during a certain point of time weren't allowed to perform in opera, so that's why you had the countertenor kind of range.
Yeah.
As time has gone on,
the castratos, yeah.
Or the castrati. but as time kind of progressed, that's when you started getting more kind of like the different variations of the baritone voice, which was nice to have that specificity. But there's definitely way more opportunity in opera for a lower voice than it is for, I'd say, for musical theater or for any kind of contemporary or pop medium. There's always an ensemble of baritones, so you know there's work somewhere.
Yeah.
It's just not the flashy kind of work, you know. You don't get to sing the big aria or have the big duet. Very few shows. And usually the baritone's quite dumb. I mean, fitting for me. But it's definitely not the showy kind of flashy kind of thing.
Do you think you'd ever do Broadway or straight musical theater?
I feel like I would have to Golden Age, like kind of like that thing, like the Camelot or like, I don't know, that kind of realm. I just don't think my color of voice, my timbre, if you will, would lend itself to something more kind of like contemporary musical theater. But like, I feel like in musical theater, I'm like a bass. Like, I don't think it's like the same thing. I feel like...
True.
I know some tenors who'd probably be a baritone in musical theater, you know, like the difference in kind of like thing is there. But I would definitely be open to it. Like, Renee Fleming is like a renowned opera singer, and she's doing musical theater on Broadway right now. You know, I just, I have to work on the technique. It's a different technique.
Oh, it's very different, right? Because opera's more about like, you know, very like poised and...
Yeah.
And musical theater, while there's still a lot of technique and like people like Idina Menzel do a lot of belt singing, it's I think the way you approach, like the characters themselves, I think are just a little bit more loose.
Exactly.
I think is, you know.
And the musical style is often like, is more rock, is more pop, it's more of that kind of realm. We don't have that freedom in opera for sure. Everything that we sing, or at least that people pay to hear us sing usually, except for Against Nature, which you'll come and see. But that people like in big houses usually do have been written by people who are dead for at least 100 years. Like, so it's very rare that you get that chance to have that freedom. But also because musical theater has the amplification kind of element, like you get to be mic'd. It's like for opera, you sing to a huge house and you really have to have that positioning and that embouchure, and you gotta plant yourself and be able to carry to the back of the house without anything, without any sort of aid. Whereas musical theater, you have that freedom that you can have more fun with music, and the technique is different. It's just a more of a bright sound than it is in opera. There's less of the chiaroscuro element of the balancing of the dark and bright element. I remember I did like a master class, or was it some sort of like series of lessons I had, where they kind of tried to teach me the musical theater technique. And just the embouchure is different, the production is different, the feeling of support is different, the sound quality is just, there's so many different things that in the musical theater sound that I do not have. So I'd have to work on it a long time before I consider any sort of Broadway or musical theater thing, but definitely open to it.
How much acting would you say goes into any operatic performance?
Well, much more these days, I feel. I remember reading, I wish I remember the name, But it was this woman who is in New York, and she was in a production of something at the Met, and she was a trained musical theater actress, and she was saying that opera singers can't act. And that was, like, uproarious for the operatic community. They're just like, how dare she say something like that about us? We could act. Then you see them on stage, and it's like, oh, like, not moving. But definitely more in these days, like, we're getting hip on the Stanislavski. We're getting hip on the what's her name? Ruga Durgan or something? What's her name?
Uda Hagen?
Uda Hagen. Uda Hagen.
You're talking to a classically trained actor, so, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, thank you for letting me know. I literally was like, Ruga Durgan, like, what's her name?
Her, it's like a Swedish chef.
Exactly. I was just like, oh, I feel like the name, there's a big recollection of a name that sounds
like Uda Hagen and Stella Adler were the big two females, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, thank you. I'll just run all my questions by you for the rest of my life. Thank you very much. Nice to meet you. We're getting hip on that. People are demanding much more of, it's kind of like how like Hollywood acting changed as soon as it was like more mainstream and there's more sound and there's like better equipment, stuff like that. Now that like we have things like Met HD, like we're like seeing a singer's face is important. Like people want to know what the singer is doing, how the singer is acting. And more modern audiences are demanding of that kind of like intimacy of expression and of that emotional integrity of their audience, of their singers that they're kind of patrons to. So singers are much more in demand to do that. The kind of the old school way of planting and singing is changing much more to have more kind of dynamic expression and performance. Slowly but surely, we're kind of having more interesting and exciting ways of doing it. This show, it's gonna kind of get back to Against Nature, kind of relate this to it. It's there's never a still moment where anyone really is kind of like plant and barking. It's so demanding of the singer in the sense that one needs to be a part of that moving whole, kind of telling the story that's of a man who's like unfolding in his own sanity. And it gets kind of like more chaotic as it goes. And it's very challenging as a performer because that kind of movement is so kind of unnatural what I've been taught to do. But definitely, singers are becoming more dynamic. This show is an expression of that kind of dynamic change within the operatic performance industry.
So then on that note, how different would you say contemporary opera is versus your more classical traditional opera that, you know, that you saw 200, 300, 400 years ago? Mm-hmm.
The conventions of the time are different and the interests of the audience are different. So what people are creating, they create within the realm in which, it kind of goes without saying, right? They create within the realm in which they live in, right? So because nothing really exists in the, no one can be as far thinking, I guess Mozart maybe. Contemporary composers and directors are directing with kind of the hindsight of the antiquitous, of the past, of kind of like older things, older conventions, and they're trying to bring it to a modern audience and change these aspects of the performance medium of something that is kind of quote-unquote outdated. To something that is more engaging to an audience of people who want to see more things and who won't just necessarily stop at the beauty of a voice. So, what was your question again?
the differences between classical opera and contemporary opera.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so a lot of contemporary opera is starting to branch out from just the kind of the pretty singing model. So you have the music itself, there's a lot more liberty when it comes to things like time signature even, or kind of like the ability and stretching the range of the human voice. There's also things like extended technique and like making sound and noise music. And then you have, on the director's side, you have people who are doing more things with movement, more things with like dance. I just finished a show with Opera Q, who is a kind of a newly formed opera company in Toronto who does indie opera as their first year, called Dido and Belinda, which is a take on Dido and Aeneas, which is a Purcell opera, which is a Baroque opera. Baroque, yeah, I think it is. Maybe I'm wrong. Anyways, and when I did it, it was all about queering kind of the operatic experience, so making it open to people of all gender expressions, of all gender identity and sexual orientation. And they had me up there wearing a chainmail dress and a full painted face, beat for the gods, in high heels, walking as like kind of a drag queen-esque sorceress, evil character, antagonist kind of thing. And it was such a different experience because like it put me out of my comfort zone. It put the audience out of their comfort zone. They switched the genders of some of the roles. So the Dido, who's traditionally sung by a female-identifying person or a female-voiced person, was sung by a countertenor. And the Neis, who's typically sung by a tenor, was sung by a mezzo-soprano. So so many different things kind of overlaying themselves into it. And just that kind of, like, contemporary opera is not afraid to really go further and experiment with what their audience would like to see or what they haven't seen or how they have to see themselves. Whereas like kind of older opera can be more kind of sedentary. What's the word?
Yeah, for? Sedentary.
That's it. More static, more kind of involved in convention.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of, that's the main difference I'm seeing between the two, at least in 2019.
And another thing is that you mentioned earlier, you know, traditionally in the, you know, we think of when we see an opera, it's performed on like this big grand stage, you know, like a big show hall. For example, and here we are at the Citadel, which is very much a black box theater, which is appropriate, or well, you know, which I think lends itself much more to, you know, contemporary dance or small theater. But what unique challenges does a stage and a performance space like this present for a work of opera?
The challenges, there are many. Oh, I think there's kind of like no room to hide in that sense. Like we don't have a wing or like I have like a side place you can go in between. There's no place you can take a little water breaky. There's hardly any place to really store the props. It's such a small and intimate venue that the audience has the ability to see everything you do. And every sort of thing kind of matters. And there is not the ability to rely on great set pieces or a grand spectacle. Especially in this set, it's very minimalist. There's a desk, there's some chairs, there's a rug, and a projector. That's pretty much all you really have to do in order to create a captivating story in a space like this. There's no dead space at all. Like the chamber musicians who are in this piece are a part of the work. Like they're in the space as well. There's no stone left unturned in how one can use the space. So it's very, that's challenging in a sense because you're kind of responsible for everything. Like if a book goes too far, it can impact the next part of the piece. And the audience will notice it because the capacity isn't huge, the space isn't huge. I remember seeing a show at Soul Pepper Theater and there was kind of like a more kind of black box space. And it was kind of the same, oh my gosh, wow. Only now am I realizing the similarities of the show. It was about a man, it was about that, the guy who... The medium is the message, and he was really famous back in the day, and he kind of, like, had a stroke. I forgot the name.
Was he an opera singer? Or?
No, it was about, like, he's like a regular dude. It was like the theater production that I did. It was about a story of a man. Anyways, okay. He had a stroke, kind of unraveling, and you're seeing different aspects of his story and kind of how his life is kind of crumbling around him. And every element of the theater had an exact explicit purpose, and it was just a small... atmosphere, and a leaf would fall from the sky, and I'm like, is that a set piece, like, error, or is this correct, or
yeah.
It had me questioning as to what any intent of the piece was, and that was kind of like, in that small scenario, you're able to see everything, and you're able to really be a witness to everything that's happening on stage, which is both a benefit, and for the audience, it's very engaging. But horrible for the performers when it like kind of mask those things and making sure everything is like really intentional.
Well, just on that note, you mentioned that you're actually on stage with the musicians because a lot of the time you got your performers up here and you got your musicians in the pit. So you're together but separate in a way. And here you're literally in the same space. What does that do for you just having the people on the instruments that much closer to you?
It makes you more responsible for yourself. Like, there's no conductor and there's only three musicians. So everything, every single word you sing is a collaboration between the musician. There's no way to separate yourself from it. you're listening to the breath of the musicians to see if like if that's a cue or what they're doing, their expressive purposes. They're listening to you and you're listening to them. It's a much more of an exchange all the time. Whereas on a musical theater performance or an operatic performance where the pit or the orchestra is a separate entity from you, it's much easier to kind of be in your own land or just watch a conductor and be that and like and be connected to that. Whereas you really have to feel the broad expanse of music in order to participate, where there's really nothing keeping you in time or keeping you in the right place. I feel like it'll make the audience kind of appreciate the grand work that it is, and kind of challenge their ability to suspend kind of disbelief and suspend and be able to absorb and create a world where they're kind of like the musicians aren't there, but they're there and they're working together and it's a whole, but also you're able to participate in this narrative. It's very interesting. It's much different than anything I've done. Actually, I've done stuff like that before.
And you know, with the audience is also that much closer. Having that connection with the audience, what does that do for you as an artist? Can it be distracting at all, noticing that like wherever you look, you're looking into somebody's eyes? Mm-hmm. Rather than just if you're on a regular big stage, you're looking out, but you're not necessarily making contact with any one person.
Yeah. It's like, it's so weird. Like as a performer, like we learned in opera school at U of T that like you, an actor is like aware of the audience being there, but it's not the reason that they're there. They're there to kind of tell the story and they separate themselves from the audience. I remember when I was doing my first ever show, whenever someone would sneeze in the audience, I would by reflex say bless you in the middle of the show. And it was like the weirdest thing. It's like, I know the audience is there. I know I'm in a story, but they're both happening at the same time. And being that in this performance space, the audience is higher up. It's a raked stage, a raked seating. So the audience is higher up than us actually. So you're right. Literally there's nowhere I can really look that won't be, I have another pair of beady eyes in the dark looking back at me. But it's very, I guess it's not like challenging. I guess like an actor prepares. An actor knows, like...
Great book, an actor prepares.
A great book. But, yeah, like, it's not as difficult as one may expect, as long as I'm really in the character. Because, like, my character especially is a servant who is not engaged with the audience at all. He's very... the only person he communicates with is the other servant and the master, quote-unquote, who is Alex's character. Yeah, it's not that hard for me. For Alex, it's probably much a little more difficult in that sense.
You mentioned that the set is very minimal, but there's also a lot of lighting and projections that happen, which you do see a lot of both in stage and in opera. How much does the mood, I guess, or the atmosphere add or enhance or affect the performance that you're giving?
Mm-hmm. When we rehearsed the full thing for the first time without lighting, I had a very different interpretation of what it was until we did. Like every time I do, I feel a little bit different about it. Like the so many different forms of art is like mixing its way. Such a multimedia kind of production. And you get such like historical context, you get like the visual art medium as well as the dance and the music. It's a really well-rounded performance. But to go back to what you were asking, the atmosphere is very much affected by the kind of by the set. The only thing that really change are the positions of the chairs and the position of the desk and some lighting in a projector most scenes. But it creates such a different mood. You really do feel as if you're in a different place of the house, or you're in a different world even, or like at some points you're in his memories, at some points you're in a study, and some points you're in the countryside. It's like at one point you're even in England, but it's really, everything feels different. The music sets the atmosphere, as well as the lighting, as well as the dancing, as well as the positioning. Everything lends itself to a different experience every time, even within a kind of minimalistic space. like the way that the direction has been set is it's very easy to imagine yourself in a different world. So that's the very interesting part of it.
The show opens exactly a week today, if I'm correct.
On 22nd, I believe.
How ready do you feel?
I feel more and more ready every day. I also feel more and more terrified every day. But I feel like that's something, as a performer, you never really get over completely.
Do you find that it's, like, a certain amount of nerves and adrenaline are healthy for any performance?
Yeah, I definitely think... I think there's a big difference between, like, distress and eustress. Like, there is definitely a positive stress that is keeping me going. And I do sense that we as a production are more cohesive and are improving more and more every single day that we are in rehearsal. So I definitely feel as if it's going to be a great show. We've done the show. We've ran it maybe 3 times already. It's just every time it's just that fine little layer of detail. Like, nothing's ever perfect. So we're just really working it out. But it's going to be great by the time it opens, I'm sure.
And I know you like, there's 4 days, and then there's a gap, and then there's another 3 days. And you have a 4-day gap in between sort of the first and second runs. How... A layoff, so to speak, how does that affect you as a performer?
Definitely, it's a good time to refresh. Like, getting burnt out from a show is very real. And having that time to kind of rest in between is very beneficial. And it makes sure that we'll come back fresh and ready to go again. And then I think we do a run through before we do the show anyway. So it's going to be right back to how it was before. And the same consistent quality that we've been giving at that point anyways.
So you find that it's like, it's actually good. It's like, okay, let me take a day off. Like, sometimes it's good not to think or do the art because that makes it better.
I think so. There's nothing good that can be done from exhaustion is my kind of belief. And if you do the same thing every single day, you will get exhausted. It's a natural part of life. So I do think that it's going to be like to feel fresh after that point. Like, a 4-day stretch is like a perfect amount of time.
Right, yeah.
And then having a little break and then having a 3-day stretch, perfect. It's going to be great.
But on that note, I mean, when you are doing a play or show, yes, the performance is going to change slightly every day, but you're also essentially doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. So how do you keep it fresh and sort of don't fall into complacency a little bit when performing?
Yeah, it's so easy to go on autopilot. And kind of what you're trying to do is like making sure that your things are efficient and as like you get to the right place at the right time. But you really, as a performer, really have to think about making sure you're in the intention at all times. Like, I know what I'm doing, but I know I'm doing this for a reason. And that keeps the interpretation fresh and alive. Whereas if you don't, it becomes routine. So that's kind of what I take it as. Like, making sure I know what I'm doing because I'm doing it for a reason. That's the word you said.
What are you looking forward to most about the show when it goes up?
I'm looking forward to finishing that first night. Like, that adrenaline will never be as high after that point, and the sense of accomplishment will never be as high. And the sense of error never be as high. So getting that out of the way will kill a lot of birdies. And it will be... I'm very excited for the people to see it and to put myself in it. Instead of watching a video of somebody else doing it and like really knowing that I inhabited a character.
You know, they always say that sometimes critics will come on the second night because the second night is... At least, I remember when I was doing musical theater, they always say the second night is lower than the first night. Why do you think that is? Is it just an adrenaline thing?
I definitely do think it's an adrenaline thing because the first night is when you kind of gauge when the audience reacts to things. It's the time you gauge when, like, when's the laugh gonna come? When do the tears start? When are people affected? When do my energy levels deplete in the show? And then when you do the second night, you come with that preparation. And that can either change or better your performance, or it could kind of make you, like, nothing... That energy is not there anymore because you know you've done it. The sense of accomplishment is like there and gone. And after that point, it becomes the job. Not to say that like shows ever become like kind of like, it's always a kind of fulfilling thing to do a show. I always feel kind of positive to do a show. But after that point, it's like, now I have to maintain the energy level. And now I have to do a consistent job to every audience who comes. And it's no longer about my satisfaction and now about giving the experience.
Right.
So the energy levels, I feel like, do deplete after that first night. And it's like a magical phenomenon, because no matter what show I've done, no matter what role size I've had, it's always been that.
Yeah. I think it's like a mental thing that goes on. You know, you open in a week, but then in 2 weeks, the show will all be done. Does it feel weird?
It definitely does feel weird, because the rehearsal process was only 2 weeks long for me, with exception of a couple of days of music rehearsal beforehand and a couple of days of kind of like pre-dance prep ahead of time. But it's like we did our first run through the end of the first week. Not every day we do it as a full run through. I've learned everything within like a span of like 4 days. So by the time it's done, like usually you have a good chunk of time to really sink your teeth into a piece. But this piece, since the remount, everyone else has already done the work. They already know what they're doing. It's only me who's kind of being substituted in. So I definitely do feel as if it's going to feel weird at the end of the day. But I'm very excited, because that means that at that point I would have survived. And yeah. I feel like surviving was a huge part of my thought process in the first half of performance preparation.
We did mention that you are a black performer, mm-hmm. and not to talk too much about race, but I'm struck by the idea that you don't see a lot of African American opera singers.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing more today, but historically, you know, it wasn't something that was overly common. What would you say to, you know, young African American kids that maybe want to get into this profession?
I would say, just do something you like, and if you like doing it, it's good. Like, I had the opportunity to talk with Angel Blue, who is, I think they just finished a run of La Boheme at the COC, but she was the Mimi of at the COC. I've been a fan of hers for a very long time. And when she was talking to me and a couple of other black students who go to U of T in the Faculty of Music, she was saying, it's like, just go and do it. Don't let anybody stop you. Just go forth. And kind of an unwavering path to what you want, because good things will come.
Right.
And that was something that really affected me, especially. And then something that I've always known. It's like to do something that you like is always a satisfaction, even if the opportunity isn't there for you. But opportunity is there.
Right.
Right? Like, one has to keep striving for for those opportunities. And it's getting easier and easier every day. So that only thing is, I would say, is keep doing it. It's the art is fun as heck. So just keep doing it, because at the end of the day, you'll always be happy in that regard.
Well, the show is Against Nature, and it goes up here at the Citadel and Company Ross Center for the Arts, May 22nd to 25th, and then May 29th to June the 1st. Corin Thomas-Smith, thank you so much for your time today, man.
Thank you so much. So nice to be here.
Yeah.
And that was my conversation with Corin Thomas-Smith. He is part of the show Against Nature, which runs at the Citadel and Company Ross Center for Dance, May 22nd through 26th, and then again the 29th through June the 1st. That does it for me today. Stay tuned for my show on Wednesday, when I'll have horror icon and scream queen Lynn Shay and actress and activist Kate Cortelio from the new film Ask for Jane. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Bye for now.